Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty. I'm hoping that this new headset is, yes, it's working perfect. Sorry about that, a little bit of feedback. I have a new headset, so I wanted to make sure that you could hear me okay. It's always fun doing live shows. And you just never know with technology. As you all know who have followed and listened over the years, today, I'm telling you, I woke up. It was the most magnificent sunrise. I'm cruising through a dark city, dropped off my daughter. The sun starts rising, and the sky is like this baby blue streak, the fluffy, hot pink clouds everywhere. And I went to take a picture so I could put it on so that you guys could see it. And I just couldn't capture that depth of color. It was just so beautiful. And the coffee was great, and the puppy love was great, and the weather's finally calming down here in Florida. It's not as hot and gross. And I woke up with this pit of angst in my belly, like something really bad was going to happen. I have no idea why. It's just so strange when you wake up and you have like this overwhelming feeling that something bad is going to happen. That's not normally my normal state of being, so I'm being very cautious when I drive. I'll just leave it there. We have a tornado and marine warning right now, so there is a storm coming through, but I don't think that's what my gut was. I have no idea. Very strange how your body works and your intuition works. And, you know, you always have answers when you look in the rearview mirror, but when you're driving, sometimes not so much, if you know what I mean, jelly beans. I'm super excited. I think this person, my next guest, Deborah Anderson, has the same kind of like crazy, gypsy, quirky, energetic love for life that I do. I really get that vibe from her. She is a regular old gal who loves living the most of her life, out of her life, you know, so we totally groove on that. She has diabetes, and this is something that I really find we have to talk more about. As a celiac, diabetes and celiac disease and things like that are extraordinarily important, but her diabetes is type 1, so I want to learn more about that. I'm excited to learn about her chronic illness, how she struggled through it, how she has now become a CTO, and for you guys who don't know what that means, that's Chief Technology Officer and Director of Project Management. I wonder if she's hiring. Maybe she'll hire me. She's pursuing her doctorate in psychology, and she just seems like she's a pile of happy joyness and bouncing around. Like all of her emails that she sends me just seems like lots of energy. So this show should be the bomb diggity diggity dom. And I need one more cup of coffee. I have one dog on the right side of me, one dog on the left side of me, this beautiful cool breeze coming in from the ocean because of the storm that's brewing in the Gulf. And the chat room is open. So for those of you who are sneaking me at work, I love being the little devil, chat up, ask questions, say hi, or just, you know, throw me a gift card of, like, coffee. You can mail me coffee any day, and I love you. Or a postcard that says you love my show or whatever. Or if you're doing an event and you need a speaker, man, I need to get out of this place, man. I need to travel. This COVID thing has really weighed down my itchy feet. As most of you know, I'm a green thumb and an itchy feet kind of girl, gypsy, totally. You know, I got to be on the road, but I also have to be in the ground. So I'm not like vampire in the ground, but like gardening. Okay, guys, I heard that. You guys got jokes today. All right. Knock, knock. Is that Deborah? I think she's there. Hello? 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 Hello over there? Well, I see her. but I don't hear her. Can you guys still hear me? Hello? Uh-oh. She might not be there. It says she's there. Dun. Deborah? She's there. She's just not answering yet. Maybe she has us on hold. Yeah, that's it. So anyway, guys, definitely come and play and contact me. It's always fun to hear your point of view and your opinions on things and what you want to get out of the show, because I'm here for you. As you know, I don't get paid to do this. I actually pay to do it. So feel free to give me your feedback, because this is for you. For me, too. I'm not going to lie. I enjoy meeting all these people. They're just amazing. My headset's working. So let's try this. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Deborah? Yeah.
Are you able to hear me? Yep.
Oh, am I able to hear you now? What happened? You were like in the vortex of non-hearing.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I could hear you, and I was like, I'm here. I promise I'm here. Just a second. I want to make sure I don't get feedback or anything, because I've still got the mic going, but.
It's okay.
Well, you know what? At least
yeah, I did a show once with my new.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I did a show once with my new microphone, and I had it in the headset, and I couldn't hear. And I'm like, why? It took me forever to figure out what happened. I had it plugged into the wrong thing. Yeah. I muted myself. Oh.
Well, you know what? You just roll with the punches. Life doesn't always turn out exactly the way we plan, but at least it turns out.
I call it, you know, God's plot twist. Like, the universe just goes, oh, you're bored today? There you go, plot twist, flat tire. You've got to be able to surf. You know, you've got to bend your knees and just go with it. And if you can get really good with seeing the plot twist coming, you just duck and start being like Jackie Chan with life.
I like
have
that.
Fun with it. Because,
yep, exactly.
You know, it's just too short.
Well, such a wonderful introduction. Thank you. I did hear you, even if... Even if I wasn't coming through, thank you for all the nice things you said.
No, I'm excited to having you on, and so this will be a lot of fun. But first, who are you? What do you do, and what makes you you?
Wow, that's a really good question. I'm still trying to figure that out after, you know, so many decades of life. It's like, who am I, and who do I want to be when I grow up? But it's like, oh, wait, I think I've already grown up and already have a granddaughter, so I think that states me as, you know, I'm grown up. But right now at this phase in life, I want to give back. I think that's the key thing, as far as I've lived quite a few different facets, and I want to make sure that I'm helping others who may be struggling through things like type 1 diabetes or any chronic illness for that matter, to not be ashamed and actually plug through and know that there's support out there. So who I am today might be a little bit different than what I was 40 years ago, and yet I find that we're kind of the same people. We evolve. You know, when you mentioned the type 1 diabetes for a moment there, I cringe. I'm like, oh no, she's announcing I'm diabetic. It's like, oh wait, that's supposed to happen. It's like this new thing to be able to come out and actually admit the diabetes.
Really? I'm surprised that you would be kind of shocked by that. The way everything has come across from you is kind of like you're a flag bearer and taking charge of it. So that's kind of interesting. I wonder why.
I think when I was diagnosed, and that was a few decades ago, and people didn't know as much about, you know, doctors didn't know as much about diabetes. We've obviously learned so much more, even in the last 10 years, let alone last 20, last 30 years. But when I was a little kid, I remember, because I was six when I was diagnosed, and it was like my friends were afraid to play with me because, oh, no, we're going to catch it. We're going to catch it. And I'm six, and I'm not the expert, but I have to learn all these things. It's like, wait a minute, you can't catch it from me. So I think that's where I started to not want to tell people. And then
yeah,
they say, well,
sense.
Okay.
It was stigmatized.
Yeah. You can't be discriminated against. You can't lose a job because of this. But yet you find that in the real world. And I'm not, you know, laying fault on anyone. I get it. It's like, oh, no, we have to deal with this medical issue. What do we do? And maybe it's better if we hire this other person instead of this gal that has this disease. So I started to learn how to just hide it and try to be this normal person. And what's normal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm realizing that wasn't necessarily the right approach. And what hit me was it was a few years ago, and I wasn't able to get – I'm on an insulin pump. And the insurance wasn't covering the insulin pump, and it was like, I don't know, $15,000. It wasn't cash I had laying around, you know, in the cookie jar or anything like that. And I needed the insulin pump to stay alive. I mean, I could try to do the shots, nothing against that, but I know from the past that that would not be a very long life in my particular situation with the type 1 diabetes. So finally, I thought, you know, I'm just going to give up. And I'm like, you can't give up because there are other people out there who are probably struggling even more. They don't feel like picking up the phone. They don't feel like doing anything because they're hurting. You have to step forward to help those people, because if you have the ability to actually pick up the phone and do something, you need to do something. So I called the governor's office. I don't know that I actually spoke to the governor or anyone important, but I called the governor's office and explain the whole, you know, it's like, this is going to cost you this much to put me in ICU. It's going to cost you this much to bury me. You know, it's going to be basically a couple $100,000, or just have the insurance cover it for $15,000 and you can save $185,000. Well, I got my pump within a week.
Nice.
Yeah. And it was like, at that moment, I realized I need to step forward, and if not for myself, I need to do it for other people. I need to be able, and it really, at the end of the day, whether, no matter what chronic illness or emotional illness or mental illness, whatever it is that people are struggling with, someone needs to be able to advocate for that person. And that really is what motivates me in here and now, is to be there for the person who maybe can't be there for themselves, to advocate for them.
Well, and I think, you know, throughout my trials and tribulations of my life, I have decided in the last portion of my life, not only is it going to be the best portion of my life, I'm going to be that person that I needed when I needed him, you know? And It's really a powerful position to be in, because there's nobody on this planet that understands your story more than you do. You know, from the crying and the woes and the discrimination on a lot of levels and whatever that story is and compels, I think it's a tool. It's a power. It's why we walk in grace after it all, right?
Yep, exactly. Well, and I think all of it, I mean, life in general is about balancing. And, you know who you are as a person. For example, you know, are you the, I'm not asking you, are you this type of person? But I mean, a person has desire. Are they the type that are going to forgive someone, or are they the type that are going to seek revenge? And I'm not here to judge either approach personally. I would rather forgive someone than to go try to, you know, get even or whatever it is. So there's no satisfaction for me personally in that. But knowing who you are and kind of what your path is, even before you go down that path, it's like it helps you to find that balance, if that makes sense. Because everything seems to be about balance,
right?
Whether it's the physical, the emotional, the, you know, the understanding, dealing with the people, relationship, all of this stuff is, how do we balance this and who we are in the world?
Well,
and
that's where... Oh. No, that's okay. It's healing that allows you to get to the healing process. Because you have to get good with it. It is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. And one of my key things that I'm trying to help people is to understand that they, and you said it you pegged it when you said that, you know, we understand our own health better than anyone else. We're the ones that live in the body, in our own body. We're, you know, 24/7 with ourselves, so we understand what's going on. And I'm not, you know, I'm not knocking doctors. Hey, we wouldn't be where we're at without some, you know, medical advancements and things like that. But I really want people, especially people struggling with, you know, chronic illnesses. And obviously, I understand type 1 diabetes. So especially people struggling with the type 1 diabetes, it's like, know your body, know what's going on. And sometimes the suggestions that the doctors have are not the best suggestions for you. I mean, say it with respect, but it doesn't mean that you absolutely have to do what they say. I can't believe I just said that. It's like I'm giving advice not to listen to a doctor. I'm not really trying to say don't listen to your doctor, but definitely listen to your own body. And I've found so many cases where had I listened to the doctor, I wouldn't be alive today. But instead, I went with my gut.
Well, and I think one of the things that we always have to remember is that there's a couple of things. One, we all have a Karen switch, and you can tickle that so easily, right? Everybody on this planet has a Karen mm-hmm. switch. And so when you're in the thick of trying to understand what's going on with your life, you tend to be a little bit more raw and tend to be a little bit more predatory about yourself, right? Because you want this fixed. And the yep. second thing that we really have to embrace is the fact that these doctors have to study thousands and thousands of diseases and symptoms. And, you know, that's why they spend so much gosh darn time in school and in residency. And in a lot of ways, Western medicine takes the human out of the doctor because of the amount mm-hmm. of time that they have to eat, breathe, live this. And so there's a certain amount of knowledge that they have that's overwhelming, that's very clinical, and there's a certain amount of humanness that has been taken out of them, that emotional piece. There's a lot of detachment there. But they don't know everything. No doctor on this planet knows everything. You can specialize in toenails, and there's still going to be 55,000 bazillion things to learn about toenails. And so you as an individual, as a person, you know everything about you. You know your tics mm-hmm. and your annoyances and your moods and, you know, what feels right, what feels wrong, whether you're off or not. And so you are your best advocate. And I so strongly believe in self-advocacy. In such a huge way, because like you, there are many people who had that little ringing or sense or whatever that gut feeling is. This isn't right. I need answers. And it saved their lives because doctors yep. don't know everything. And most of the time, the way Western medicine works, are these poor doctors, after going through a grueling amount of school and residency, they're now part of a for-profit group that wants them to see a new patient every 15 minutes. So those doctors don't even have the opportunity to build that relationship and know who you are as an individual. So you have to come in with your game plan, and this is what's going on, and here's my list of things, and let's do this. And they need yep. to be more of a team rather than like a drive-through, which is what I know here in Florida, one of the worst healthcare systems in the country. That's the way it is down here. They just want to hit that insurance button as many times as possible. And you're like going through a subway in New York, and that's the way they, mm-hmm. they run things here. And it's unfortunate, but you have to be able to advocate for yourself.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And it is, you know, I get it. There's the profit aspect of it, and money is at the core of a lot of things in life, including medicine. And, you know, I've found that when I practice, like, for example, endocrinologists, that would be the specialists that deal with the type 1 diabetes in most cases. Hey, they have the right answers according to the book. I mean, what they're saying as far as the math that goes into calculating how much insulin and so forth and so on, they're right. But they're not necessarily right for my case. And I've also found that it's almost like my diabetes looks at me and says, hey, you know what, I'm going to throw you a zinger on this one, and I'm not going to behave the way I'm supposed to behave. And I have to be prepared for that and to respond to it differently than what the textbook says. And I think that is the hardest thing to explain to doctors as far as, look, I want to be a part of the team and work together, but it doesn't mean your textbook has all the answers.
Exactly right.
Oh, so let's break it down into, let's give a couple of minutes really explaining to our listeners what type 1 diabetes is, which is different than juvenile diabetes and type 2 diabetes, is there?
Yep, there's a type 2. Actually, it used to be, like when I was diagnosed, I was told that I had juvenile diabetes, and now they've gotten more into calling it type 1 and type 2 because they figured out, it used to be it's like, oh, you're diagnosed as a child and you must have juvenile onset diabetes, so they just called it juvenile diabetes, and that means you have to take shots. And then if you got it as an adult, oh, you don't need to take shots, you could probably handle it with diet, and they really simplified it. Well, now they're finding that someone could be an adult and actually diagnosed with type 1, which is what used to be called the juvenile diabetes. But also they've found that children can sometimes be diagnosed with type 2, where it's not insulin dependent. So, and there, you know, for a while there was judgment on that one where it's like people would say, oh, you have to take shots, so you must not be managing the diabetes properly. And it's like, look, my pancreas is a paperweight. It's not doing anything. It's not doing what it's just taking up space. And it's a very small organ, so it's not taking up very much space, but it's not doing what your pancreas is doing. So this isn't, you know, it took a while to kind of explain to people, this is not a judgment thing where somehow I've done something wrong at 6 years old. It's not like I was abusing my body. I didn't know how to abuse my body at six, you know? So it was just a malfunctioning pancreas, and it's never really, I mean, it's never come around, although I start to wonder if sometimes, you know, I told you it throws me a zinger. I start to wonder if sometimes it thinks it's going to create some insulin on its own, but that's neither here nor there. That's the type 3 that my husband teases me that I may have created. But, you know, there's so much more research that's going into all the different facets of diabetes. But to put it in a more simplified manner, there's the type 1, there's the type 2, and the type 1 is insulin dependent. And type 2 may or may not be insulin dependent, depending on, you know, a lot of times people, they may be in their 80s and they're diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And I think of it as the pancreas is getting tired. It's not necessarily performing to its full level. So it you may need insulin shots to kind of boost it. You may be able to manage it through pills for type 2 diabetics. Now, I can't manage mine through pills because it's like it's a completely different disease. And that's probably one of the really challenging aspects, is because people think it's like just severity of the diabetes between the type 1 and type 2, and in reality, they're almost like completely two different diseases. They're similar. They do relate to the pancreas, but type 1, your pancreas isn't working. Type 2, it might be dripping out some insulin periodically. And I don't claim to know all the ins and outs as far as how to handle type 2, because I'm not a type 2, I'm a type 1. So that's where maybe, you know, the doctor and the team and coming together to say, what's the best approach? Should we do this through diet and exercise, through some kind of pill, some kind of insulin? That's where probably doctors who specialize working with type 2 may have had more exposure to those with type 2. But for type 1, it can't be treated the same way because it's not.
So I will say that the machine is relatively new, in especially in our generation. That's a relatively new machine. Really hard to come by in the beginning for a lot of people, like you had already talked about. But it saved quite a few of my friends' lives. It made their lives a lot. They're not going through seizures and comas and all of the things because of the consistency of it. Talk to us a little bit about what it's like with the machines. Are they still as big as they used to be?
I'm sorry, I missed that. My phone is not the best connection, but the
that's okay.
Did you say the insulin pumps or the?
Yes, that. Thank you. I know it saved my friend's life.
They're a lot smaller than they used to be decades ago. Mm-hmm. From me?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I said the insulin pump is a lot smaller than than it used to be, so it's a little more functional, but it still has some development work needed. It hasn't quite arrived, but the pump itself, let's see, I've been on an insulin pump for about a little over 20 years now, working through the company Medtronic,
wow.
And they've done an awesome job coming up with a pump. Now, the other aspect of it is a continuous glucose monitoring, which is kind of part of the equation so that you understand, you know, what the blood sugar is doing and what's needed as far as food and so forth. Speaking of, Rusty, I hate to do this, but maybe this is good timing. I actually have to go grab a sugar soda. This was not in the plan, but this is what diabetes does when it likes to send a little zinger. My blood sugar is actually dropping. So instead of having some excitement.
So why don't you go do that? And...
yeah,
no. No seizures today. I can't rescue you. All right. So you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty, and this is exactly why we have this conversation, because you need to know, you need to be compassionate, and you know, what can you do to help your friends? I have a lot of friends with diabetes, and you know, there's all kinds of varying methodologies that are used, but always having a little sugar candy or something on you or around you helps when you're with your friends, because of moments like this where the blood sugar just decides to go, I don't want to be normal. I just want to be a pain in the ass today. So definitely, you know, be aware of those things. So I'm glad we're having this conversation. Boy, those kicks in the gulp butt. Hi, how do you feel? A little better?
Yep, a little bit. That's where, and see, this is another one of those things where it's like doctors will say, oh, carry a little sugar cube or sugar, what are those things, glucose. It tastes like you'd imagine dippity-doo tasting. Not that I go around eating dippity-doo. But,
right.
But you find out, you know, what works for your body and what – I have a wonderful husband of 26 years, and I wouldn't be around if it weren't for him. He understands my diabetes almost as well as I do. And we figured out that sugar soda works the best. It's the quickest just to down – usually like a half a can of soda, and that's enough to bring me around.
So explain to us –
I'm trying not to slurp
for those people who are – No, you can slurp. It's fine. The show's designed specifically to be sitting at a bar or at a cafe and just being human and conversing. So, how does the machine work?
It I connect the it's an infusion site, so I connect that to usually I do basically the sides, kind of not right in the center as far as where the stomach is, but right on the sides. So I connect the infusion site on one side, and that's what actually is, you know, it's where the insulin is being delivered. And then the other side is what's called a transmitter, and it connects and transmits the blood sugar. So, for example, sitting here, that's how I knew. I looked at the pump, and the pump was telling me, hey, the transmitter is telling you that your blood sugar is low, which is really convenient compared to, you know, 30 years ago where it was all dependent on just testing the blood sugar. So it's kind of like I have something going in and something coming out.
That's one of my friends in college. He just couldn't control. And back then, this was many moons ago, they called it juvenile diabetes. But he would end up in the hospital at least once a week. He just wasn't managing the blood sugar. This was in the early 90s, so a long time ago. But when you have it installed, I guess, is it a painful procedure? Is it an overnight procedure? Or is it pretty quick and seamless?
You know, I think the hard thing is, like 30 years ago, it was easier to control. And my theory is that as we age with the disease, it becomes more resistant and harder to control because it's not responding the way one would expect. Like, it's not responding according to a textbook. So I find that with the pump, it's definitely easier because I'm able to see the blood sugar real time. So if I'm in question, I can just look and not that the blood sugar is always accurate. We have to do a calibration like 3 times a day, which means checking the blood sugar and then programming that into the pump and saying, okay, this is what it should be. are you close? But assuming that a diabetic is doing the calibrations when needed, the pump actually makes it easier to control the diabetes. So it's definitely a plus. But at the same time, I really do think one has to rely on, as far as the, like sometimes, for example, I've talked to endocrinologists and they're like, you can't go into a seizure when you're 75 blood sugar. They're like, 75 is really good. And it's like, not for me. When I'm 75, I'm actually headed for a seizure. I'm like, that's impossible. But I've had my husband actually test the blood sugar as I've gone into a seizure, and it's at 75. And it's like, whatever the doctors are saying is impossible, my body's doing it. So, you know, we're not always following that textbook. And it's a matter of when I feel like it's low blood sugar, even if the number isn't low, I will go treat it with sugar. And I've been able to ward off seizures that way. And it's like, hey, it's a matter of knowing your own body. Now,
what
that's not an argument to say, hey, go do this. Pardon me?
Right. What kinds of tips or tricks or advice would you give somebody who wants to trust learning their own body? I think that's a big thing. We kind of second guess these things. Oh, you're being a hypochondriac or whatever. But as I've gotten older, I'm like, oh, no, that's not hypochondria. That's real. And you have to learn how to trust yourself and your instincts. What kinds of things would you recommend for people to do to learn how to do that?
I think the key is to document things. Now, I'm not very good at that all the time. I'll rely on my memory. And that's not the way you should do it. You should actually document. So whether that's a journal or sometimes I document things like in my calendar, I'll mark down that, hey, I felt this way. The blood sugar was this at this point, and then try to find the patterns. I would imagine that if somebody actually had more of a journal type thing where they're writing it down, they're able to actually review it. It kind of depends on the learning style and how people take in information and how they analyze it. But at least if you're journaling it, if you're able to find an endocrinologist that's a team member, at least there's something that you can review with that team member. And I've actually found quite a few like nurse practitioners and nurses that have been, I hate to say this, but more helpful than even the doctors. I think you mentioned earlier, as far as being the driver, and it's like the doctor wants to be the driver. And again, not trying to pick on doctors in general, but I went to ER one time because I had, I can't remember if it was a case where the blood sugars were too high for 3 days or too low. I think it was too high. And that's kind of my cutoff. If it's 3 days and that blood sugar is not responding to anything that I do, whether it's a high blood sugar and it's not responding to insulin, or it's a low blood sugar and it's not responding to food, that's when I'm going to go into ER and say, you know, something's wrong. Could you please run through some tests? And the doctor actually yelled at me that I was taking up his time for coming in there. And I wanted to cry. I'm like, I'm sorry. This is 3 days. I've been trying to treat it and not bother or burden the medical, anyone at the hospital, but I felt that I needed some help. And I think people need to know that it's okay to ask for help and find out who it is that's a part of your support team. Well, in that case, the nurse turned to me and he whispered and he goes, don't pay attention to the doctor. He says, I had a sister in exactly the same situation you're in right now. And she listened to the doctor, didn't get help, and she died. It's like, whoa.
Mm.
So when he said that, I keep remembering that, where it's like, yeah, you're going to have people that are going to yell at you for, you know, like you said, hypochondriac or for taking time or for doing all these things, but don't listen to them. You know your body. You know when you need help. And if you need help or you feel you need help, get help.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to knock on a few doors. I recently had to go in for some neurological testing, and I visited this one neurologist, and he reprimanded me because I don't go. I personally am not a pharmaceutical advocate, meaning my body's screaming and it's aching in a lot of pain. I need to find out why. I don't want to mask it with drugs. And not to say that there's not a value to pharmaceuticals, But for me personally, I want to find out the root cause and then take care of it. And he went up and down me one side of the other. Why do I bother going to doctors? Because doctors give medicine. And I was like, well, I appreciate this conversation, and I'm sorry that you demean the value of your work by thinking that you're just pharmaceutical reps, but this is not a good fit for me. And I left. And I ended up finding another neurologist who I just absolutely love. And she's very thorough, very accurate, and we'll get down to the problem. But what a crazy ideology to have when somebody's advocating for themselves and telling you exactly what they need, which is to find out the root cause of the pain, and your only solution is to give drugs. I was like, nope, I'm out. Peace. But that's part of self-advocacy.
I had something similar.
Being strong enough. Go ahead.
I thought he was a neurologist, and I don't know where the miscommunication, and not that it matters as far as labels. He was, turns out, I'm not sure if he even worked in a neurology office, so I don't know if he had exposure to anything in that category. Not that it matters, but it helps if people have some knowledge of the particular field that they're discussing. But so I think he was a nurse practitioner in family medicine. And kind of almost more of a GP. And he said, well, I'm going to prescribe this particular medicine. And I said, you realize I took that medicine and I had a seizure and I broke my leg and I sheared my leg in three different places. Had to have rods put into my leg, the whole thing. So I said, I'm not really inclined to take that medicine because I don't know if it caused the seizure, but I do know it didn't stop the seizure. He goes, oh, yeah, that's really strange.
Right.
And then he paused for a really long time. He says, okay, well, I want you to take this medicine, and then we'll meet back in 3 months. And it's like, I'm thinking, isn't 2 + 2 = 4? I mean, it's like, did you hear what I said? I'm not taking that medicine because that medicine, I took it, and I ended up in surgery. So we're not doing that again. He goes, oh, well, I still want you to take the medicine. And I'm like, are you listening? So then I made another appointment. And
I would have looked at him and said,
you're exactly the same guy.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I'm still kind of searching for that perfect neurologist as far as dealing with the seizures, but I'm not – mine have never responded to medicine. So I'm still trying to – like you, I'm trying to find the cause. I know when a seizure is coming – only from the aspect, the way I describe it to people is like an uh-oh. If you're going to say uh-oh, I say and then by the time I get to oh, I'm already unconscious on the floor. Because people are like, well, don't you know it's coming?
Mm.
Well, sort of, but not enough time. Like, how much can you do in between an and an oh to try to prevent anything? So I have not been successful in preventing damage to my body. Usually it's just wherever I fall. I'm gonna hit my head. I'm gonna hit my. I have so many places I didn't know could bruise from seizures. But I'm determined that I'm gonna find out what's causing the seizures and find a solution to that.
I worked at a restaurant as a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I worked at a restaurant as a bartender, and one of our waitresses had epilepsy, and. I used to call it the lightning bolt in the brain. Like, it literally is that quick. You don't know when it's coming, and you're done. And, we would gather around her to keep her from hitting her head against the wall. And, there's only so much you can't really restrain. You kind of have to be like bumpers at a bowling lane so that they don't damage themselves too badly. And it's scary. It's the scariest thing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
She used to have them all the time, and I'm like, this is not the job for you, I think the stress.
Oh, they are scary, and I usually have them once every 5 years. Oh, I'm sorry. Now I have them once a month, sometimes twice a month. But it used to be once every 5 years or so. So it was actually, I was able to handle that. But twice a month is not exactly the most fun.
No. Have you gone through your MRIs yet to see if there's any lesions or anything?
Oh, yes, I have. I'm glad you asked that question because I actually went in for the EG and MRI, and they called me the same day. My husband had taken, he works. I mean, he works like 7 days. He took the day off so he could take me in for the test. We gotten home. We're going to call, you know, it's Friday night date, whatever. We get this call from the hospital, and they're like, you need to come in the hospital right away. It's like, what? What are you talking about? Well, we can't tell you, but you need to come in the hospital right away. And they're like, I've never gotten a call like that. That's very odd. Well, it turns out I have a brainstem tumor. And it's like, what do I do with that information? Like, I don't even know where to put that. So the hospital lost power. So they would have done the surgery that night, but they, you know, were on reserve power. And there's a storm going on. And I remember being really, really cold. And I'm sitting here and I'm like praying because I don't know what else. My husband's there with me, but it's like, what do I do with this? Are they going to, you know, cut my head open? What is this? Because this isn't diabetes. It isn't seizure, but maybe it's causing the seizure. So I thought, well, maybe we have an answer. And I think we were there like 4 or 5 hours. And then they came in and said, well, we've decided that we'll send you home and we'll meet back with you. Well, a month later, kind of a long story short, they just said, well, you know, we don't think it's cancerous. So we're just going to leave it there and see what happens. So I'm like, okay, that's a case where it's not like I'm going to operate on myself, so I'm going to listen to the surgeon, but they don't think that it's causing the seizure, so it's unrelated. But it was a bit scary to find out that they actually had a scan of my brain, and there's this little extra something that's not supposed to be there.
So that's why you need the neurologist, is to really just discern what's going on there. Wow. Yeah, that's going to be – I recently went through a breast cancer scare last month where I went in for my normal mammogram, and I was told to come in for more testing because I had two unwanted guests. And so I feel you on that. It's in the moment scary thing, like, do I cry? Do I whoop it up because this is it? Like, what does this actually mean? How is my world going to change?
Well, I didn't know. It's like, am I supposed to call up my kids and say goodbye? What, you know?
No, that's, I can't even tell you. That drive home, oh, Lord. Yes, it was one of those.
I'm sorry.
I don't want to ever have to do that. But do you have, do you have the help that you need, or getting closer to getting the help that you need to discern whether or not it needs to be removed?
I think so. In fact, I was just looking at my phone right before this, and I noticed that I got a call from the people that are supposed to call me with a referral. So maybe it all has to do with meeting with you today, and it's all working out today. So that's a good thing.
Fairy love. Yay.
Exactly. You know, that night, though, Lane, it's like my husband didn't know what to say either. I didn't know. And normally we carry on these conversations for hours, and it's like I thought, you know, one of two things is going to happen. I'm either going to go in for surgery, they're going to take it out, we're all going to live happily ever after, or I'm going to go to, you know, to heaven or, you know, past this point, and I hope everyone lives happily ever after and let them know I love them. And it was like, I'm not going to worry about it, because worrying about whatever it is that's happening isn't moving us in a positive direction. So I just decided, I'm just going to, you know what, just going to face this one little baby step at a time.
And that's hard. You really have to pull up your big girl panties, because at that moment, at least for myself, and I'm tough as nails, I literally just think, and I'm going, oh my God, my will's not ready. What am I going to do with my daughter? She's 16. She's, you know, doing college. Like, you just run through everything in your head, and it's almost like a panic button goes off when you find out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what my daughter was out with her friends, and she came home, and she was at the house, and we called her, and it's like, okay, I know this is an odd request, but you need to actually call Grandma and Grandpa and just let them know what's going on. And she's, you know, she's 21, and she's freaking out. It's like, no, I don't want to lose you. And it's like, no, just let them know. Ask them to pray. That's a good thing to, you know, ask them to pray, and you'll keep them posted on what's going on, and giving her something to do seemed to help on that. But I felt bad for her too, because it's like all of a sudden, you know, mom and dad are at the hospital and she's having to kind of pick up the pieces and figure out what to do.
Yeah, that's tough. I don't even think we stopped in our chatting. We're going to have to do this again. Where can people find more information about you? How do they get a hold of you so that if they have questions, if they want to talk to you about, you know, life plot twists and how to get through them sanely, how do they get a hold of you?
Right now I'm relaunching it, but the brand that kind of relates to what we're talking about here is it's diabeticreal.com. So it's like diabetic, like the person, and then REAL.com. And it's brand new, and I'm launching a podcast, and I'm trying to bring resources together to help people, and not just diabetes, but obviously that's the area that I understand, but just try to bring resources together to help people as far as chronic illness and understanding their body and listening to their body. So if anyone has questions, any questions helps me to actually be able to give answers and help other people, because they probably have the same questions. If that made any sense. You can also find me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook quite a bit. My kids are on Facebook, so that means I'm on Facebook. And my profile is it's facebook.com/DeborahInfo. So it's just like my name is spelled, and then INFO at the end.
Play a little game. Ready?
Yep.
He's like, I don't know. I don't trust you anymore. All right. So top five things that you absolutely love about living.
What five things do I absolutely love?
About
the last
being alive. About being alive.
About being alive? I love the fact that I'm alive. I love it. What is it? Somebody, I asked a question of this guy, and he says, I'm vertical and taking nourishment. And I thought, that's an interesting answer. But I think of that all the time, where it's like, yeah, you know what? I'm vertical and taking nourishment, and that's a good thing. Life could, there's always something that could be worse. I don't want to say that out loud, but I mean, it's like just the fact that we're alive, beautiful. I love the fact that my husband sticks with me even after all these decades of diabetes. He's a wonderful man, and he's my best friend. I love people. I love exposure to people, meeting new people, and learning about people, and especially opportunities to help people. That really is what motivates me in life. And let's see. I love finding new ways to I don't think of diabetes as an enemy. Diabetes is like a constant companion for me. It's like, all right, you probably will win at the end of life. You probably will have the upper hand, but you know what? We're companions through life. So this is an opportunity to figure out how we can get along better and find kind of a cohesive way to approach life. And of course, my kids, I can't, I would say my husband, I love kids in my life. It's like, I love listening to you talk about your daughter and all the fun times and the things that you go through. And it's just so much in life with family and kids.
Yes,
and
she's my favorite person on the planet. And it's, I think, you know, not having the best childhood was a great litmus test as to what kind of mom I am. And I'm pretty laid back because of my personal childhood. And I just watch her, and I think she's so fascinating. You know, when she was born, she was fascinating. And now that she's 16, it's fascinating. It's like this little growing, evolving soul. And for me, oh, that's like my number one. I love watching her grow and become this really crazy, amazing woman.
Definitely. Yeah. And you know what you mentioned as far as we can relate back to our own childhood, and that's probably a whole nother show, but I went through an abusive childhood, and my brother abused me. And, I mean, there's just so many other aspects, but it does make you think. It's like, I don't want this to repeat another cycle. I want to make sure that my children are safe, that they're happy. And it does affect, I think, how you are as a parent. And that was a priority for both my husband and for me, as far as making sure that our kids were well adjusted and had a happy childhood and definitely not an abusive childhood.
Yeah, and I just I have no idea, like I don't understand anger the way some people are, they get so angry, you know, like we see it on TV all the time now with this parent phenomenon where they just flip. And my ex-husband was the same way. He's a flipper. And I'm like, I don't have that in my body. I mean, there are times when I do lose my mind, but it's far and few between. And sometimes some people are just every day losing their shit. And I don't understand it. And I don't want to live a life surrounded by that.
I don't understand that either. I keep asking my husband, it's like, how is it that I don't want to say anything bad about her, but my mother-in-law is not my fan. I don't know why. Honestly, I don't know why, and if I knew why, I'd try to fix it. But as my husband says, that's never going to be something that you can fix because she's angry with life. And I'm like, but I don't understand how are you angry with life? Like, what did life do to you that you're angry with it? And why do you take it out on somebody else that has nothing to do with what's going wrong in your life? So, yeah, I don't quite understand how people can flip that switch and just become that angry.
No, I don't either. And I think that's what makes us special, people like us who are like, nope, we're not going to do that, and we're going to show the world to be the better patient of what a person should be. And we raise our children that way, and I think that's a blessing in the lesson for sure. So, Deborah, you have one more question from me. Are you ready?
Okay. Yep. I think.
What's your favorite color?
Pardon me.
What's your favorite color?
Purple.
Good answer.
Although I love pink.
Good answer. You know, my grandmother always wanted me to have pink, and I'm kind of that anti-pink because of the feministic side of me. And I've really tried to incorporate a little bit more pink in my life. It's been difficult, but in honor of my grandmother, I've been doing that. And I'm starting to soften up a little bit with it. But purple's my go. That's my color. For sure.
Well, that's nice of you to try to, you know, honor your grandmother.
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, there's just so much in life that we miss out on, and she passed away a long time ago, and I never really got to be a part of her life. And so what little she gave me in thought and wisdom, I try to hold on to, if that makes sense. I think it's important.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Thanks. So when is your podcast, when is that starting, and what's it called?
It's going to be called Diabetic Real, and the launch information will be on that website, thediabeticreal.com. So there's a spot to sign up if you want more information as far as when the podcast launches.
So everybody go out and check out Diabetic Real. I will put that in the summary below after the show. I don't think I can do that now because I'll probably hang up on her. So we're going to wait. All right, my friend. So we are wrapping up. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us before we have to say goodbye?
I don't want to say goodbye. No, I'm just kidding. I love the chat. You are so delightful. Now, again, do I call you Rusty? Do I call you Reverend Rusty? Or
no, the Rusty's fine.
You are so
delightful.
Don't
call me by my
first, really
middle, and last name.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity. I feel like I scratched the surface, but you're so delightful.
Yay. Well, come back on again. Well, I have my month. I will be putting out my YouTube calendar. So part of the year I do YouTube. The other part I do the blog talk, and they overlap. So people get to see faces and expressions. And then if they don't want to do that and they're at work, they have the radio too. So I overlap those. So just let me know what times you're available on Thursdays to have that conversation via video, so I can
make
fun of you and stuff.
Well, there we go. That works. Hey, video is my world. That's the other part. When it's not diabetes, it's video. So that'll be fun.
Right. Well, if you're the CTO of a company, yeah. You too.
And everybody, you need to donate and keep Rusty going with this show because it is so, man, I could not listen enough yesterday. I was listening to all the shows. So many wonderful people and guests that you've had, and not to mention yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel so blessed. Thank you. I feel so blessed. I mean, I've had people from all over the world and just beautiful people. You know, I wish we had more of that every day in every aspect of our life, like the radio and actual commercialized television where you really get to meet true, authentic people. It's just, I love it. So thank you for your support.
Definitely.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty, and that was Deborah Anderson from DiabeticReal.com. Make sure you check her out and support her and her cause, and definitely click on her newsletter so that when she is up and running and her podcast starts, you can be part of that conversation, and I have a feeling she's going to make some crazy paths in her life, and this is just going to blow up and explode and be wonderful and delightful and delicious as it is for me. It's one of my favorite things to do in the whole entire world, other than watching my kid grow. She's pretty amazing. And I guess my third thing is probably my Nerf gun. My Nerf gun's really important to me. And my dogs and Chocolate and Merlot and Moons and Babylon. Next week, let's see who's our fantastic guest next week. I am super excited. And then, like I said, I will start the YouTube in January. And so we will be lined up for next year, too. Crazy madness. There's so many beautiful people on this planet. And we get to explore them, you and me, together. So exciting. All right. We have Miss Evie Carpenter on next week. And she is yet another hot ticket. I'm so excited about the people that are showing up and being the person that they needed when they needed them. And so Amy is an author of two best-selling books, Be Strong, Be Wise, and The Young Adult's Guide to Sexual Awareness, Assault Awareness, and Personal Safety. It's going to be probably a tearjerker, so bring your tissues, your popcorn, and lots of hugs and love and compassion. So we'll definitely see you next week. Know that you're loved. Know that you're beautiful. Just go out there and be kind. Be there. Be present. Take your time. Don't speed today. It's not necessary. And sip your coffee longer. Hug your partner harder. And make fun of your kids. They make fun of you. It's all good. Life is short and beautiful. Until next time.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.